Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Sponsored by Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better healthcare. It's another conversation with Dr. Jeffrey Copen. He's the chief medical officer at Northwestern Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital, and he's been gracious enough to be our regular guest Tuesdays about this time. Hi again, doctor. I hope you're doing well.
I am, John. How are you today?
I'm pretty good. I'm pretty healthy, I think. But you never know. You never know.
Hey, John, I didn't ask last week. How's your mom doing?
Thanks for asking. She's doing pretty good. My mom, and you know, it's, you know, when you're 97 and 93 or 2, ask me tomorrow. But so far, lately, weirdly, doctor, my mom seems to be getting stronger and better. I don't understand that. At this rate, she'll live to be 200.
Well, let's hope that you inherited those genes, right? That's fabulous.
I know,
really
that's
fabulous.
That's what Brenda says. What's the correlation between that? Is if my parents live long, do I have a predilection to living a longer time, doctor?
You do. You do. People who age very well, and it sounds like your parents have, Jen, we call them super agers. And super agers, a lot of that has to do with genetics. Obviously, it's far more than just genetics, but the genetics go a long way. And hopefully, the progeny of the super agers will inherit those great genes.
Yeah, hopefully so, because my parents weren't super healthy livers. They were healthy. They were super savers, though. And here's a tip. If you're going to live to be 96, have some money in the bank, because care when you're older is just so doggone expensive, doctor.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. It's, you know, as we've talked about before, it's personnel intensive. It takes a lot of people. The technology that's required is expensive. Medications are expensive. And of course, there's physicians and hospitals and all of those things. So I agree totally. When we think about what it is to retire and how we do our financial planning, a critically important piece of that is what will be our health needs as we get older.
Are you an advocate of long-term health care as an insurance plan?
Yeah, you know, I think there was a time where the long-term care insurance made a lot of sense, and I'm certainly not an expert at this, but I do read about it. I think the premiums have gotten so high that it's difficult for most people to justify those plans. So if you have a good insurance person and you're interested, you really want to look at multiple companies and multiple coverages to see if there's something out there that you can afford.
Speaking of aging, you know, our friends Ozempic and Wegovy, there's two new things that they seem to report that those are helpful in, and one of those is aging. Another one is maybe some of the side effects or effects of autism. Are you hearing any of this stuff?
You know, Jen, as you and I continue our conversation about Ozempic and its cousins, is there any malady known to humanity medications are not effective?
Let me read you this email I got from a listener in East Lansing, Michigan. John, when you were talking this morning with Bob Surratt, you mentioned Ozempic and how they are being, there are the uses for the medication. My son has been taking Ozempic since December, and we have been slowly increasing the dose. Drew is autistic with limited language skills, so it isn't easy to assess how medications are affecting him. We often have to rely on watching his mood and behavior. It has been clear to us that Ozempic has had a positive effect on him. He's calmer, he's less agitated and anxious. The shot is given once per week, and we have noticed his agitation, along with his appetite, increasing as we get to 5 to 6 days post-injection. So this family says it's had a marked change in their son. And I would love to know how this medication is helping him with anxiety and agitation. His doctor has said it does have an impact on neurotransmitters. Any reaction to that email I got, doctor?
Yeah, this is the first I've heard of Ozempic's use in autism. First thing, autism we know is a spectrum. So one person's autism is very different than another person's autism. So we can never make generalizations. The second thing, is yes. I mean, these medications, one of their effects is neurotransmitters in the brain, but that's a very general statement. And again, we shouldn't make any conclusions. I'm just happy for this one individual. It seems to be helpful. John, the issue here, though, is, you know, these medications are so expensive. And as we continue to come up with potential uses for them, how do we pay for this, right? I mean, it's a gigantic issue. We're all struggling with it. We're going to have to come up with some type of solution to this over time, because there really does seem to be lots of really great uses, and we're going to want to use this medication widely.
There's a long story in the New York Times yesterday about measles and Robert F. Kennedy Jr. is talking about it. And while he has said some things that make sense, he also said things like vitamin A and cod liver oil and a healthy diet are good ideas. And I know you and I have had this conversation before, but I just want you to comment on whether or not maximum doses of vitamin A can be a prophylactic to the measles.
No. No, there's really nothing more to say. The only way we should be dealing with measles is vaccination. I'm happy that RFK Jr. is not speaking out against measles vaccine. I would say his endorsement of measles vaccine is tepid at best, and I think he needs to do better as the Secretary of HHS.
We're talking to Dr. Jeffrey Copen from Northwestern Medicine. Doc, just before I leave this topic, let me just bring up one other thing about autism. When the president spoke a few days ago, he said that we used to see autism in 1 in 10,000 kids. Now we see it in 1 out of 36 American children. Are those numbers true? And has it been that way all along and we didn't notice? Or is the incidence of autism on the rise?
This is a very complicated subject, John. There's multiple reasons for this, including some that are most likely unknown. I would say there's a lot more recognition of autism than, say, like when you and I were kids. The definition of what is included in autism has been widened, and it's been widened quite a bit over the last two decades. So that's part of it as well. If there's stuff in the environment, perhaps, that we don't know about, food, these are the kinds of things that the president was referencing in his speech last week. Is there something there? But the one thing I can say that we know, and this is a fact, is vaccines, pediatric vaccines, do not cause autism. Very, very important. This has unfortunately become an issue again, and we have to be very clear about this. This has been studied in millions and millions of children in very rigorous ways, and there is not a causation between pediatric vaccines and autism. I understand that the Centers for Disease Control has now been charged to look into this again. Hopefully what that will be is another review of all of these well-done studies so we can again get clarity for people who need it. But this is really important. Vaccines is not a cause of autism.
What's antivirus? I hadn't heard about that before. If I had, I sure don't pay attention to that. That, I understand, may be what struck Gene Hackman's wife, Betsy. But what should I know, or do you know about that, doctor?
All right, well, the first thing is we should be happy here in the Chicago area. We don't have hantavirus here. This is something very much found in the Four Corners area of southwestern United States. You know, John, that place where Arizona and New Mexico and Colorado in Utah come together.
Right.
It's comes from a certain type of rodent. The most common one is a deer mouse. We don't have that here. The saliva of an infected rodent, the droppings of an infected rodent has this virus, this hantavirus in it. And human beings can actually contract this hantavirus from the rodent's droppings in saliva. And that's the theory that the coroner has about what happened to Gene Hackman's wife.
And is has a high mortality rate, doesn't it?
Yeah. Something could be as high as 40%, I understand. She had the lung involvement of this. It's a pulmonary condition that could be quite terrible. And the coroner believes that that's what led to the loss of her life.
Well, does this happen, doctor? Does somebody die and then the other person discovering them is so aggrieved or shocked by it that they have a heart attack and die? That seems apocryphal to me. I get it, but I also wonder if that's true.
Yeah, I don't think any of us know enough about Gene Hackman's medical condition, but I've read the same thing everyone else has. Apparently, he had pretty advanced dementia and other medical problems. By the way, it's hard to think of Gene Hackman as having advanced dementia, right? Yeah. I mean, the way we know him as an actor. And I think we could see a situation, if we want to put together a scenario, Mrs. Hackman develops hantavirus infection, dies from that, and Gene Hackman, because of the condition he's in, he can't respond to it. He's left alone, and unfortunately, he passes away, too. I mean, I think that would be the best way to think about this, but I'm really speculating. But based on what I've read, that would seem to be the best explanation.
That's Dr. Jeffrey Copen, Northwestern Medicine, Lake Forest Hospital. If I ever get sick, I'm going to come see you. Actually, I'm not going to pull that card, doctor, but it's good to know that you're out there doing what you do. Thanks for helping us on the radio.
And I'm always here for you, John. You know that.
He's with Northwestern
and everybody take good care.
Medicine's Lake Forest Hospital.